You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, March 31st, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And it also has to be the birthday of two people who are instrumental in making me who I am today. Number one, my dad, the Rockin' Johnny B, turned 73 years old today. Johnny B, you outlived Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings, but you still got to catch Willie Nelson. He's leading the pack for you old pickers out there. And also, it is the birthday of the woman who brought me into marijuana legalization reform just 10 years ago this May. In fact, the Global Cannabis March this May will be my 10th anniversary. That would be Madeline Martinez from the Normal Board of Directors, former executive director of Oregon Normal. So they both share the same birthday. Happy birthday to my dad and to Madeline Martinez. All right, coming up on the show today, all sorts of very interesting stuff to bring you in our activist agenda. Yesterday, of course, I didn't have a live show because I took a van load of people down to Salem, Oregon, the capital of this great state of Oregon, to testify against two bills, House Bill 3400 and, more importantly, Senate Bill 936. These are bills that would severely limit the medical marijuana grow sites, especially in the cities, to just 12 plants. Now, I know a lot of people out there in some of the Midwestern and Southern states would be happy with 12 plants, but in the medical marijuana states, especially out west here, that would really cut down on the number of patients who could be served. And of course, as all medical marijuana restrictions go, it would harm the most desperate patients, those patients who can't afford to shop at dispensaries, those really sick and disabled people who can't work. And so we went down to testify against that. Coming up on the show tonight, you will hear my testimony in the Radical Rant, along with some other Oregon notables who went to testify. Erin Purchase, she's Brave Michaela's mom. She testified in Salem. John Sajo, a longtime activist going back three decades here in the state of Oregon. Lindsay Reinhart, my friend from Idaho, who's now head of the Undergreen Railroad here in Oregon. And Anthony Johnson from New Approach Oregon, the man who helped get marijuana legalized in this state. They'll all be in the Radical Rant segment. Before that, we'll hear testimony in the activist agenda from the people that are for those bills to restrict medical marijuana. That would be Representative Buckley and Senator Burdick, who wrote the bills and are sponsoring them. Then Jeff Sugarman from the Oregon Cannabis Pack, Rob Bovette from Associated Oregon Counties, and Scott Winkles from the League of Oregon Cities. We'll hear from all of them. Also on the show, we will be talking or hearing from Mark Mayer. He's a legislative counsel. He'll explain the differences between House Bill 3400 and Senate Bill 936. But of course, we'll start things off with the 420 Radio News. We've got all sorts of interesting things in the headlines today. The Attorney General of Colorado filed a response to the lawsuits against Colorado legalization at the U.S. Supreme Court. The National Cannabis Industry Association has given the boot to Tommy Chong. We'll explain why. Indiana's got a controversial new religious freedom law, but it is turning out to be a boon for the Church of Cannabis. We'll talk about that. We have got a historic moment in the Texas House as medical marijuana was filed for the first time ever. And in Italy, they are looking at legalizing marijuana. And then stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to go into in-depth discussion of the Responsible Ohio proposal that's now gathering signatures to legalize marijuana in 2015. Been talking with a lot of folks on Twitter about that who can't understand why I would support a legalization that creates a 10-grower constitutional cartel. We'll take your calls at 84-420 Radio if you want to talk about it too. All that's coming up, but first, the 420 Radio News is next, right after these messages.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Hey, this is Big Daddy.
I like that.
I want you cats to join me at the Funky Roller Ring, right here on 420 Radio. It's like the groove in Soul Town, smashed together with a greasy pork sandwich on the side, baby.
Two hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
Funky Roller Ring.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal. Ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. A lawsuit filed by Oklahoma and Nebraska that asks the U.S. Supreme Court to curtail Colorado's new recreational marijuana law could have dire consequences for all three states, Colorado Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman said. Colorado argued in a response to the lawsuit that Nebraska and Oklahoma were trying to reach across their borders and selectively invalidate state laws with which they disagree. Kaufman said if the U.S. Supreme Court sides with the two states that border Colorado, the decision would take away the regulatory system that Colorado has built, but leave the legalization vote intact. Quote, "I don't see anything but chaos on the other end of that decision," end quote, Kaufman said, adding that Colorado authorities are already working to keep marijuana within the state. She cited the arrests of a drug ring that was sending marijuana out of state and hauling in millions of dollars. The marijuana lobby is tired of the Cheech and Chong stoner jokes and wants to be taken seriously in Congress. That's why the National Cannabis Industry Association dropped actor and marijuana activist Tommy Chong from its Capitol Hill lobbying push, slated for the end of April. According to an internal email obtained by Politico, the cannabis industry wants to move past the stoner stereotypes embodied by Chong as it tries to remake itself as a serious and respectable segment of the economy. In a Monday email sent to Chong's representative and allies, NCIA Executive Director Aaron Smith said that after deliberations and feedback from allied members of Congress, the group decided Chong is not the best representative in stodgy Washington, particularly when it comes to lobbying right-of-center lawmakers. The email was shared by an anonymous source sympathetic to Chong's work on a successful 2012 campaign to legalize marijuana in Washington state. Indiana's new religious freedom law has been widely criticized and condemned by many, but an innovative marijuana activist in the state is using the bill's legal protections as a means to set up a new religious sect, the First Church of Cannabis, where members would aim to use marijuana freely as a sacrament in a state where the substance remains banned. Quote, "It's a new religion for people who happen to live in our day and age," end quote, Bill Levin, the church's founder, told the Huffington Post in an interview Monday. Levin is dead serious about his new church. He says it's founded on universal
principles of love, respect, equality, and compassion. And similarly to other religious movements like the Rastafarians in Jamaica, who see cannabis use as a sacrament, Levin said members of his church will adopt a similar belief in the plant. But unlike the Rastas, there is not a traditional deity at the top of this faith. Calling it an historic moment, medical marijuana advocates praise the filing of what has been deemed comprehensive medical marijuana legislation in the Texas House. Introducing the legislation at a press conference on March 17th, Representative Marissa Marquez says, quote, "It's time for the Texas legislature to have this important conversation and adopt access to medical marijuana into law," end quote. An El Paso Democrat who represents House District 77, Marquez said the bill includes limitations to, quote, "safeguard the community and minimize the misuse of medical marijuana," end quote. It also clearly defines the serious and debilitating medical conditions for which cannabis has been found to be an effective alternative treatment, such as cancer, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, seizure disorders, and PTSD. Surveys show that 77% of Texans support medical marijuana reform, according to Caitlin Dunkley with Texans for Medical Reform. Senator Jose Menendez of San Antonio filed the medical marijuana companion legislation, SB 1839, in the Senate, Marquez said. An effort to legalize marijuana is getting underway in the Italian parliament, with some 60 lawmakers having signed onto a motion to do just that by the time it was rolled out 3 weeks ago. The effort is being led by Senator Benedetto della Vedova, who is also Italy's Undersecretary of State for Foreign Affairs. A little more than a year ago, the country's top court threw out a 2006 law that put marijuana in the same legal category as heroin and cocaine and swelled the country's prison population. That Berlusconi-era approach has been replaced by a sort of decriminalization, where users face misdemeanor charges, but only fines or administrative penalties, such as suspension of a driver's license. But people caught growing plants still face possible jail time. That softening of the marijuana laws went largely unopposed and unremarked upon. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome!
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines, and today we're bringing you special coverage of testimony on Senate Bill 936 in the state of Oregon. This is a bill and a companion bill, HB 3400. These bills would severely remake the Oregon medical marijuana program, particularly in respect to growers who would be required to adhere to severe record-keeping statutes. The SB 936 calls for 7 years of record-keeping, but the most odious parts are the limitations on the number of plants that a medical marijuana grower could cultivate. In a city, they would be limited to just 12 plants, and that's 6 per patient, leaving them only able to care for 2 patients. We'll learn more right now.
Chair Burdick, Chair Leininger. My name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. My drafting areas are public health, marijuana, and energy law. I drafted both Senate Bill 936 and House Bill 3400, and I was asked to briefly testify as to the differences between the two bills. Before I begin on my testimony of the differences, it might be helpful for those here today to testify on them to understand that there are other components of the bills that are related to purely legal changes that were brought forth from the implementation of the dispensary statute, as well as in order to make some of the law enforcement provisions, some of the legal provisions that are currently under OMMA work with a world in which marijuana is legal. So there's a lot of that stuff in these two bills as well. However, I'm here to just talk about the differences between them, hopefully in order to help frame the discussion. It would be helpful to probably look at the two biggest differences between these two bills. And I think that House Bill 3400, the most substantial difference between that and 936, is that House Bill 3400 has a dual licensure provision that allows a medical marijuana grower to occupy the same premises as a producer or processor licensed under Measure 91. The language does specify that the product has to be kept separate, but it does allow for that if they want to be duly licensed. Along with that, House Bill 3400 also contains language that directs OLCC to administer the dispensary program, not other components of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, but the dispensary program through a memorandum of understanding with OHA. And it contains all the conforming amendments along with that. So that's the biggest component of 3400 that's not present in 936. The biggest component of 936 that is not present in 3400 is that it establishes additional registration and safety standard requirements for processors. And the way we wrote that is it's not a new type of registration. It's if you're a medical marijuana grower and you want to process marijuana into marijuana products, then you have to get an additional registration and you will be subject to more stringent safety standards for the production of those products. It also includes some language with regard to dispensaries for rulemaking, for more oversight over the processing of products at dispensaries as well. So that is the major component of 936 that isn't in 3400. Real briefly, I should probably talk about what most of the discussion has been about, which is about the limits, the grow limits. And in Senate Bill 936, that provision is in Section 16. In House Bill 3400, that provision is in... Just a minute. Section 13. A lot of attention has been paid to the limit that each bill places on what you can own in the way of mature plants at a single grow site. So 3400 has in non-urban, non-residential areas a cap of 48 plants, and Senate Bill 936 has the cap for that amount at 24. In both bills, if it's an urban setting, residentially zoned, the cap is at 12. House Bill 3400 also takes out the correlating cap on the amount of product that you're harvesting from the plants, as well as the correlating cap on immature plants. Underneath Senate Bill 936, the correlating amounts remain at the existing ratio. So those are the differences between the way that the two things can be possessed. Underneath both, there is still a cap where you are concurrently owning only six plants along with a patient or a caregiver. So that stays the same. The main difference is what the cap is for each type of product at the grow site, whether it's the dried leaves and bud or the mature plants or the immature plants. So that's the important thing to remember there. Only a few other distinctions I should point out at this time. 3400 contains what I'm going to call, for lack of a better term right now, some patient rights provisions. For instance, I won't go into all these. There's about five of them. But for instance, one caps the registration fee for a veteran who has post-traumatic stress disorder at $20 for getting a registry identification card for medical marijuana use. That's an example. 3400 also explicitly removes
Hey, this is great, man.
There you go. The Deputy Legislative Council explaining some of the differences in the bill. Again, the worst provision is it limiting in-city growers to just 12 plants, only able to serve two patients. You'll hear more from the sponsors of those bills coming up after the break. But happy 420 to our friends in the Mountain Time Zone. Denver's getting it on. I hope you can too. We're back with Senator Burdick and Representative Buckley after this.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420radio to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby! Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did. Support for 420 Radio comes from Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies, a guide to gardening with nature, authored by Kip Zonderkopf. Based on the ethos that a living soil is the foundation of a thriving garden, Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies is your guide to naturally growing resinous buds and nutrient-rich veggies. Get the ebook now with instant download at kickassorganics.com. Previews available on Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google Play, Kobo, and many other online retailers.
Activism begins with ACT. The Rush Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back. We're continuing our look at the testimony against Senate Bill 936 that took place yesterday in Salem. We were there as a part of it. And coming up next, we've got Representative Peter Buckley and Senator Ginny Burdick. They are the sponsors of these two bills, House Bill 3400 and Senate Bill 936, respectively.
Madam Co-Chair, Member of the Committee, the Senator tells me to go first, and of course I always adhere to what the Senate advises me to do. Co-Chair, Members of the Committee, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the Legislature. I appreciate for your time and consideration House Bill 3400. I appreciate Legislative Council Mark Mayer's work on this and his description of both these bills. I think what we're trying to do with both these bills is try to find what that balance is to make sure that the medical marijuana program can still serve patients, but also address the concerns about excess marijuana ending up in the black market. How do we have a system that is smart, that's safe, that's effective, and it works primarily for patients first and foremost? So with House Bill 3400, what we try to do is listen to a lot of different ideas between people who have a sincere desire to keep the patient-grower relationship and have a discussion about how that might evolve to the next level, given that we have dispensaries now, given that there is going to be recreational marijuana available now as well. How do we keep that patient-grower relationship intact for those that's very important for them to receive the marijuana that works for their ailments? So we tried to find that kind of a ground where a grower could decide to grow a certain number of plants in order to maintain the relationship with their patients, but as a kind of trade-off for staying underneath a cap of the number of plants, they'd be allowed to store more of their marijuana that they harvest in order to serve their patients. And the other side of that was that they would participate in some sort of tracking system so that there would be a record of the number of plants they grow, what they harvest from those plants, and where that marijuana is going. So that was the basic approach, try to say, as we try to protect the medical marijuana program, as try to protect the patient's ability to access growers, since if that is their preference, we set up a system that can work for the patient, for the grower, and for the desire to make sure that we're tracking marijuana effectively and diminishing any marijuana that goes into the black market. Legislative Council went through a lot of the provisions, the differences between the two bills, and I would say that I look forward to working with the committee and working with people involved in the medical marijuana community to evolve these bills to get to a point where people can feel secure that patients do have the rights and the access they need to make sure that we have a medical marijuana system that continues to provide the medicine that people need and do it in a way that's balanced out, that does set a kind of guideline to where the line is between the medical program and then crossing into the more heavily regulated OLCC recreational marijuana program. So again, this is an attempt at a kind of compromise position that can, again, put patients at the forefront and can a system that can work for growers with not being too overly regulated, but actually have enough structure behind it that people have confidence in. And with that, I'll let the rest of the people who want to testify, and I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ginny Burdick. I represent the people of Senate District 18, which is Southwest Portland and parts of Washington County. I want to, first of all, commend not just Mark Mayer, but my colleague here, Representative Buckley, for his work. He's been working on this for many, many more months than I have. My goal here is was reflected very well in some of Representative Buckley's comments, which was two objectives: to preserve the grower-patient relationship as we move to a recreational market. There's been a lot of fear. There was fear during the campaign and after the campaign that the recreational markets may somehow sweep out the interests of the medical patients, some of whom have extremely compelling stories, depend heavily on the medicine they're able to get through the medical marijuana program. The other main objective is to close off the black market for two reasons. One, the black market will compete with our recreational market, and I want to see Oregon have a successful recreational market. And number two, we are in jeopardy, serious jeopardy, from the federal government if we can't show that we are keeping marijuana from getting into the black market, especially across state lines. So with those two objectives in mind, I, with a lot of help, including from Representative Buckley, we put together Senate Bill 936, which basically will create a closed system. My bill, or our bill, we have a number of sponsors on this, will establish a limit of 24 plants. Representative Buckley establishes a limit of 48 plants. I suspect we'll settle for something within that range. I'm not really wedded to necessarily the number of plants within that range. What I am wedded to is to have a closed system where the medical growers can maintain their relationships with their clients, with their patients, and that the medical growers will have easy access to medical dispensaries for their excess product. And in exchange for being in that closed system, they will have a lighter tracking system. It will not be as heavily regulated as the OLCC grows. And I'm hoping, after talking to some of the medical growers, I was impressed by their commitment to their patients and their sincere desire not to have these changes that we're making in the medical marijuana, in the marijuana area in general, not interfere with their relationships with their patients. One grower told me that she drives up from Southern Oregon to Portland to deliver medical marijuana to one of her patients. We don't want to interfere with that. This is the attempt to try to achieve that in a way that will also stem the flow into the black market and allow our recreational market to flourish. I want to say I was kind of surprised and a little upset by some of the emails, because clearly patients out there have been getting a different message, and I regret that. I think it's not a service to the patients out here who are very fearful about losing their access to something that is demonstrably improving their quality of life. And I don't think it's fair to try to get people like that all fired up and all scared when they shouldn't be. Our objective is just the opposite. Our objective is to preserve what they already have, and I'm very committed to that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
We continue our look at the Senate Bill 936. The senators and the representatives on the Joint Implementation Committee for Measure 91 took a moment to ask some questions of Representative Buckley and Senator Burdick on their bills that they have proposed that would limit growers to just two patients within city limits.
Thank you. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I want to talk about an open secret, sort of a an elephant in the room, although it could be a donkey. It doesn't have to be an elephant. If I believe, or if I operate on the assumption that 75% of the product entering the illicit market is diverted from the medical market, and it, you know, that hasn't been proven, it's just something that we've heard during our hearings, that there was a pretty powerful economic incentive to maintain the medical program. And if growers who are currently wanting to convert from the medical grows to the recreational grows are doing so because they believe this is an opportunity to enter a legitimate business that will grow and be sustainable in Oregon, it seems to me that there's a powerful economic incentive to migrate people from the medical side to the recreational side. So are we considering any provisions to assure that there will be medical supplies available to folks if their growers do make that transition into recreational? You know, are we thinking about an obligation that gets placed on the growers or the medical facilities or even on the recreational side that makes a sufficient, safe, reliable supply of medical product available to all those that have cards?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, this is something that I've devoted a lot of thought to. After talking to a lot of medical growers. I'm convinced that enough of them will decide to go into this medical-only system to supply the system. If they don't, this is a licensed activity, and a license condition can be anything you want it to be. And I think if we all agree that a priority is making sure that there is enough supply for medical patients, then we can make that happen. This is going to be an ongoing conversation. And these licenses that are going to be issued by OLCC are going to be tremendously valuable, and they can have conditions put on them if that's necessary. I don't think it will be from the people I've talked to. I think there are enough people out there, enough growers out there who want to stay doing exactly what they're doing, serving their patients. But if that doesn't prove to be the case, we have options, and I would intend to exercise them.
Madam Chair, just a little follow-up if I could.
Okay.
I've had really interesting and I think fruitful conversations with growers and with the folks that are engaged in the dispensaries, and I think what would be beneficial is to simply invite them to try to create a structure that a voluntary structure that they would implement to make sure that folks who show up at dispensaries have access to the quality and kind and quantity of products that they need, as long as those folks have a valid card. So, well, you know, we've heard a lot of information about the altruism of folks that are currently engaged, and I think some of those stories are quite heartwarming. But I think the powerful economic incentives that are going to be in the recreational market caused us to ask the question, how will we maintain access for the marijuana that's needed by medical users? And isn't it proper for us to invite the growers, to invite the dispensaries, and to invite the processors to participate in some voluntary program, mm-hmm. and see whether or not that might meet the needs? Thank you, ma'am.
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, I think there's a great line of thought. What we try to do with House Bill 3400, we worked with growers, we worked with dispensary owners. We had Mark Mayer was generous enough with his time. He met with anybody and everybody who we asked him to sit and talk with in trying to design this. And the idea we were going behind was, can there be an incentive? Can there be an incentive for someone to stick with the medical marijuana program? And part of the incentive that we're proposing is that they could grow 48 plants for the medical marijuana program, but they could also grow, they could get for plants over 48 to whatever, they could grow for the recreational side too. So there'd be basically on the same property, they could grow for the recreation side, they could grow for the medical side. The incentive on the medical marijuana grower, if they wanted to just stick with the medical marijuana program, would be the lighter reporting methods that they'd have to go through in order to simply just grow for patients and dispensaries. That would be the incentive for them. They'd still have to be protected under the law, under this kind of smaller cap of plants, but they would have a lighter reporting system, and they could basically continue their way of life if that way of life is what was attractive to them to being in the program.
So now that the senator and the representative have spoken about their bills, we hear from some supporters of those bills. Jeff Sugarman from the Oregon Cannabis Pack begins, followed by Rob Bovet from the counties and Scott Winkles from the cities, respectively the lobbyists for those organizations.
Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Sugarman. I represent the Oregon Cannabis Pack. In 1998, I had a great honor to be able to run the campaign for the effort to pass medical marijuana in Oregon. Some of the people sitting here today, both on the dais and in the audience, were part of that historic effort. And I wanted to just spend a minute or two recounting some of the history of this law. I think it will be helpful in determining how we go and what direction we go. In 1999, we spent, 15 or 20 of us spent 3 or 4 days a week, several hours at a time, working in the legislature to do the implementation work necessary to get measure to pass the medical marijuana law and get it implemented into law. In 2005, that original law allowed for three plants and 3 ounces of usable marijuana. It really was designed as a defense from prosecution rather than any kind of commercial statute or some kind of business entity. In 2005, the legislature passed a bill that did several things. It changed the affirmative defense language. It created a new grower's card. It increased plant limits from 3 plants to 6 plants and allowed for 18 immature plants. It allowed for possession of up to 24 ounces per patient from the original level of 3, and it allowed growers to serve up to 4 patients. Almost immediately, an entire industry built up around that program now. Clinics serving thousands of patients a year, growers and processors working to fill the needs of patients, and we saw the emergence of dispensaries, and in some cases, we saw people using this program as cover to feed the black market in other states. In 2013, when we regulated dispensaries, we took a step of bringing those under control. In 2014, 2 other historic events occurred, the Cole memo and the passage of Measure 91. We understand that this legislature has a really difficult job ahead of it, trying to bring all of these different components together in a way that ensures all patients have access to the medicine they need, and that the adult use market is well regulated and controlled and responds affirmatively to the points outlined in the Cole memo. And we stand ready to help you in any way we can, and we thank you for your time.
Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Ovett, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. I have submitted written testimony, so I'm going to attempt to summarize a couple of key points in 60 seconds or less if I can. I know. First, to emphasize a couple of things you've heard before, I would say ditto to what you heard from ACLU. I'm happy to work with them on, I share the same concerns with those two sections in 936. Second, I'm kind of partial to 936. However, in 3400, there are a couple of things you probably ought to import. The patient's bill of rights, the seed provisions, probably ought to be imported in 936. Substantively, I would focus your attention on Section 14, which is the new database. We are entering a new paradigm. We're legalizing and regulating recreational marijuana. We are bringing medical marijuana and its supply system into the light. You need, I believe, the assistance of local law enforcement. I think we've heard that loud and clear from OLCC, and I think we're going to hear that from OHA at some point. So we need to carefully consider who should have access to this database and what parts of it. I would posit that it is vital and that you send a strong message to your local law enforcement partners that they be provided access to this database to everything except for individually identifiable patient information, which is not what they need. We need that for 2 reasons. One, to protect those who are operating lawfully with one of the 2 regulated systems, and 2, to easily identify those who are operating outside the system. Second, just a couple of quick notes about planning issues, just very briefly. In Section 16 of the Act, we have a 2-tiered system. Those are in residential urban areas, and those are outside. It's defining those as residentially zoned properties in cities. Counties have those kinds of residential properties, plus we have rural residential properties. We need to include rural residential in the higher limits and intense residential limits in the lower limits. And then finally, in Section 17 of the bill, basically we've redefined the dispensary statute to say that you can't locate dispensaries in residential zones in cities. We need to say the same thing with regard to counties. And I have conveniently crafted amendments to do just that, and they're posted on OLIS. Thank you very much.
All right.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. We are appearing in support of Senate Bill 936. We believe 936 brings Oregon quite a bit closer to the robust regulatory structure that the federal government would like to see in terms of marijuana distribution sales. We do, however, have some concerns with aspects of House Bill 34-400, specifically the preemptions on the local taxation piece contained within that measure. As we have indicated previously, we believe that local law enforcement are going to be integral partners to a healthy marijuana distribution system, and the current revenue distribution formula, cities are projected to receive $2 million a year in the subsequent bienniums to split among all 242. We believe this is going to be quite a bit shy eye of what's going to be required for, that, again, that robust regulatory structure that we are going to have to be successful. With that, I will use the time that Rob said he wasn't going to.
So we're continuing that discussion. That's SB 936. This bill would restrict medical marijuana growers in the city to just 12 plants. That's two patients. And in the counties or in the rural areas, 24 plants. That's four patients. There are a lot of patients this would affect. Coming up next, we'll hear the testimony from the people who are against this bill, including myself, in the Radical Rant. Stay tuned.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. We're continuing our look at the testimony against House Bill, or Senate Bill 936 and House Bill 3400. I went there in my role as the executive director of Portland Normal to speak against this bill, particularly as it would adversely affect medical marijuana growers within city limits.
Chair Leininger, Chair Burdick, and committee members, thank you. My name is Russ Belville. I'm the executive director of the Portland chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and I have some concerns about both bills, HB 3400 and Senate Bill 936. And as mentioned by the previous testimony, it did gain in Portland 71% of the vote, and many of those people wouldn't have voted for it if they thought it was going to have a severe change to the medical marijuana program. In particular, the limit of 12 plants in a city setting is very difficult for the patients in Portland. According to the Oregon Health Authority, there are 5,584 patients who are served by grow sites that serve more than two patients. Limiting to 12 plants limits you to two patients. That's 5,000 people that are going to have to be looking possibly on the black market for their medicine. This is like using a hatchet to perform delicate surgery. Furthermore, 56% of the patients on the program, according to Oregon Health Authority, are on food stamps, Oregon Health Plan, or Social Security disability. These are the people least able to be able to adjust to that and buy in a dispensary if they have a dispensary in their location. A lot of places have these moratoriums and bans. Now, there are some portions of 936 that seem promising to me. Getting rid of the 12-inch rule to determine if a plant is immature makes sense. That's as illogical and unscientific as declaring a teenager ready for sex because she's 5'6". Also, the rule that would allow a a medical marijuana facility to remain open even if a school moved in next to it seems fair to me. If the medical marijuana facilities have to do a careful search for places that are 1,000 feet from schools, schools should be held to the same standard when they look for a new place to locate. We are at a very crucial juncture right now trying to set a national standard that recreational marijuana and medical marijuana can work in harmony, and what we do here in Oregon will set the precedent for states in 2015 and 2016. I appreciate the committee looking into this and hearing our concerns, and I have written testimony for you if you'd like to look at that further, and we'll be glad to take any questions you might have at Portland Normal. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
There we go. So my testimony was then followed by other activists in the state, many prominent folks and people who have been guests on the Russ Belville Show. We'll start with Erin Purchase, the mother of Brave Michaela, followed by some more voices you should recognize.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Erin Purchase. I'm with Stony Girl Gardens. I'm also the mother of Oregon pediatric patient Brave Michaela Comstock. I'm here to talk to you about how much medicine it took to make her oil. I treated my daughter for 28 months while she received 6 to 8 chemotherapy drug combination. I did this without delivering a single Tylenol, and she also did not lose a single pound. Under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, I'm allowed to produce six plants for her, but I'm also allowed to grow for 4 patients. And I happen to have 3 friendly patients who weren't using their grow cards that allowed me to use theirs for her as well. At 12 plants that I would be limited to, granted she's not on chemo anymore, she doesn't take that much cannabis oil, but at 12 plants, because I live inside city limits, it took me 4 months to produce a harvest. At a half pound per plant, that would produce me 6 pounds of oil, which would create, or 6 pounds of flour, which would make 180 grams of oil. My daughter, from the ages of 7 to 9 years old, took anywhere from 2 to 3 grams of oil a day, which I needed 360 grams for a 4-month supply. This would be 24 plants at 12 pounds, extracted down to 360 grams. So for my 7-year-old daughter that was fighting cancer, I needed 24 plants every 4 months, and that took all 4 patient cards. So it's already, the standards aren't already enough to produce for cancer patients, adults, let alone children. Thank you.
My name is John Sajo. I'm from Dillard, Oregon, and I'm the director of the recently formed Umpqua Cannabis Association. I've been an activist advocating for legalizing marijuana since the early 80s, so this has been a long road for me, and I guess part of what we always used to say is, well, we'll leave that detail to the legislators, and here we are. And I've been following this closely on the internet, and I have to say that the work you're doing and the bipartisan problem solving that you're applying here is noteworthy and commendable, and hopefully some folks in Washington, D.C. will get wind of some of this. As far as the bills in question and the sentiment expressed, we all agree with that, and as one of the people who advised the drafters of Measure 91, one of the things that was very important was that we leave medical marijuana alone. And I think we're all talking about this supply for patients, and you know, how do we merge medical with the rec stores and all that, and one thing I think is missing in that is more discussion needs to happen about merging medical marijuana with the rest of the established healthcare system, and figure out how we, you know, we've created a system over the last 15 years where the healthcare of some of the poorest, sickest Oregonians is subsidized by marijuana farmers instead of the Oregon Health Plan. And I think we need to change that. And I think there's a lot of elements to that. We need research into proper dosing so doctors can know what to tell their patients to use. So I hope we get to that. Try to rush through this because 2 minutes goes by quick. As far as the elephant in the room, you know, we're all talking about tracking here, and tracking is just not going to do what anybody says, and tracking on these little tiny gardens, I think, is unwarranted government intrusion into, you know, patients and people that are helping them to private lives. We're all for tracking at the large scale, but tracking individual growers will never work. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening, committee. My name is Lindsay Reinhart. I'm here from Happy Valley, Oregon. I moved to Oregon for the medical marijuana laws, And I since formed an organization called Undergreen Railroad that takes medical patients from non-medical states and moves them to states that have medical protection for patients that don't have it in their own state. I had to leave my home and everything I knew and loved and cared about for this plant. I picked Oregon. I could have gone anywhere. Idaho is next door. There's plenty of states that I could have gone to. I picked Oregon for its medical marijuana program. I believe in this program. I picked it because I need a lot of medicine. I have aggressive, relapsing, remitting multiple sclerosis. This medicine is my disease's off switch. I was on 22 pills in Idaho. I could feel my kidneys, I could feel my liver, and I often wondered if I would wake up in the morning. I have children. I have a 12-year-old boy and I have a 7-year-old boy. They're adorable. They need their mother. It is scary to take morphine and Vicodin and Klonopin and Percocet and every other drug that they give you and wonder if you will wake up in the morning. I eat a lot of oil. This is my grower. He has to grow a lot of medicine for me. He also grows medicine for my neighbor. He grows medicine for my friends, and he's grown medicine for other people that have testified before you today. And he gives it away to us for free. If you reduce plant limits, he will not be able to do that, and you will force him into the recreational market to sustain the grow that he already has growing. We need growers like Crash Gardens to be able to have high plant limits to afford the medicine that we need, because I cannot afford $20 a day out of a dispensary for my oil. I get my oil for free, and it's very important that I continue to do so, or I'm going to be a zombie on my couch, and my children will not have their mother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anthony Johnson, for the record, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, thank you so much for your time. I know it's a hectic time for us all, and there's never a dull moment in this field. Today, I speak only for myself and personally, and I join in the concerns of the ACLU and Rob Bovette in the privacy concerns. I never thought I'd agree with both of them in the same sentence, but here we are. Strange bedfellows sometimes. And additionally, I completely understand the need for oversight, rules, and regulation, complying with the Cole memo. That is why drafters Measure 91 put the Cole memo into Measure 91. But Cole memo in its parameters doesn't limit the number of plants at any grow site. And I think that the debate around plant numbers really should be switched about patients, because really the medical marijuana program is about patients. And the medical marijuana program has improved the lives of thousands upon thousands of patients who depend upon this medicine, who often have charitable growers who provide for them for little or no cost, who are often subsidized either through dispensaries or other patients who are better off. And that limiting the number of patients that growers can grow for, we're inevitably going to lead to patients losing their access to medicine. And it will fall upon the most vulnerable patients who are battling poverty, who will lose their grower. I've emailed everyone on the committee a document showing the number of grow sites and the patients, and I'm afraid that restricting the number of patients that can be at a grow site could lead to 7 to 12 to even thousands of more patients, over 12,000 patients losing their growers. And so I encourage oversight, reporting, but not to restrict patients' access to medicine. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for Wednesday. So we're gonna think about and work with all the great input we got. There will be more to come on the bills, you know, more processing and thinking about how to move forward on the bills from today. But next time we're moving to the OLCC technical fix. And with that, thank you for your time. We're adjourning.
All right, folks, that is the legislative testimony that took place yesterday at the state capitol in Salem. Notable activists taking part in testifying against Senate Bill 936 that would restrict medical marijuana growers within city limits to being able to serve only 2 patients, to only have 12 plants if your garden is within a residential area. So many patients would lose access with that. It just had to be fought against, but you can find more details Visit 420radio.org for the replays of the show on demand if you missed it, or you can subscribe to our podcast, The Russ Belville Show, on iTunes. But that's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. Hour 2 is next. We're going to talk a lot about Ohio. We're going to have some call-ins, too. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.